what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Hotshot Wake Up. Hope everybody's doing good out there. On today's show, there's a couple things we're going to talk about. First, I kind of want to start with what the 2024 fire season, especially the spring coming up, what that's going to look like leading into summer, or at least what a lot of the predictions are, what we're seeing up in Canada and across parts of the United States when it comes to drought. There's been a couple fires around the planet that are worth noting. There was a fire over in Christchurch, New Zealand. Nothing massive, but it burned a couple thousand acres. It prompted a pretty big response, but reading from locals over there, it sounds like this is kind of just an annual event where in the foothills outside of Christchurch, they get these types of fires that kind of blow out once a year. People get evacuated and they kind of have to hammer it to put it out. It's kind of like other areas around the country in the United States where it's just kind of known you're going to get wildfires at certain times of the year. Like there's a mountain in Utah that's nicknamed Mortgage Mountain because you just know there's going to be wildfires there and you're probably going to go there two or three times a year because that's just when the vegetation cures out and you're going to get those starts. Then after all that, we're going to talk about the El Dorado fire, and there's a couple that was just sentenced for that fire due to a gender reveal party that went bad. And ultimately, that fire led to the death of a Big Bear Hotshot squad leader, Charlie Morton, who was responding to that fire and died as a result of this couple that had a gender reveal on a windy day, which turned into the El Dorado fire. We'll be covering that after these short little updates, but definitely something that needs to be covered. But starting off, looking at the spring fire season, one of the first things you look at is the snowpack and what's that looking like. And even extending up into Canada, because a tremendous amount of resources from the United States were sent to Canada last year, and it's trending like that's going to become the norm. And it's going to happen again this year. As of right now, Canada's version of the National Weather Service put out a statement saying that 70% of the country was currently classified as abnormally dry or in moderate or exceptional drought. And they're saying 81% of the ag land or the agricultural land in Canada is considered in some sort of drought as well. BC and the Yukon, the Northwest Territories, are seeing some of the most extreme drought across Canada. And if you look at how that translates down in the United States right now, the Pacific Northwest is kind of patchy. Like they have a lot of snow and precipitation in some areas and some areas not so much. Montana is well below their snowpack levels. That might change here in the next week or so. They're expecting some snow to come in. And then if you travel across the plains and the Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, they are way below annual snow levels. It's brown and dead vegetation everywhere. And you look at Region 4, which is the Great Basin, they have a ton of snow. And that's no surprise. We've talked about it before. They're very good at capturing the snow that's available through other methods. And they have a tremendous amount of snow this year, as they did last year. California has had a lot of rain, but there's still a lot of dead grasses and fuels, those fine fuels left over from last year that haven't burned. So it'll be interesting to see what the spring brings there. And down in Region 3, again, kind of patchy, but they have a lot of moisture right now as well. Like Happy Jack, Arizona has so much snow. There's snow everywhere down there. So it just depends. In Region 3, which is usually like that early spot that people get fire rolls to, we'll see what the spring brings for that. If you move over in the southern area, like the conditions are perfect for burning. So if that can tell you anything, they're doing a lot of prescribed burns down there. And they're taking and it's looking good. But again, it just depends with the El Nino system, what kind of precipitation is going to come across that region. But right now, if there's going to be an early fire season, it's going to be in Canada. It's going to be in the Great Lakes states areas and maybe Montana. It just depends what the next couple months brings. But I would not be shocked by April, early May, there's conversations about, hey, we might need to start bringing crews up to Canada again. It's not a big surprise to me, but maybe to the public it would be. There's still a lot of fires smoldering up there and aren't declared out yet. I've seen that through my fire career, like, hey, the Elkhorn fire is still smoldering up in the mountains there. Yeah, we got a little bit of snow. We just send a ranger up there every now and again to check on it. But the question is, do those rekindle and turn into something again? And do you have the resources to keep that from happening, especially in the early springtime? What it is setting up to be is busier than last year. Last year, again, was the slowest fire season in the United States in multiple decades. And with the lack of precipitation across many areas, I just don't see that being the case again this year. But we're to the point where some crews have already come on. Medewin hotshots are on. The permanent staff of some of these BLM hotshot crews are on and working down in Florida with Craig and Jackson traveling around and doing burns. There's crews with permanent staff out in Region 5, California. They're doing burns as much as they can. It sounds like with the spending or budget restrictions, they've cut back a little bit, especially when it just comes to allowing overtime. Usually it's like, hey, we're going to get 10 hours of burning in, but we're not going to count that with our drive time. But when it comes to saving on budgets, they're like, you have to incorporate the drive time into your burn window because we can't pay you overtime because we don't have any money. And then your burn day goes from 10 hours to like 6.5 hours. So you also don't get as much done as you normally would. And then you can argue the trade-offs of that all you want. But the point being is the staff's on and they are conducting burns. Region 3 crews are probably starting to think about turning the light on, at least in a month. So folks are getting ready. And there is potential in areas for a very busy spring fire season. I'm going to jump into this El Dorado fire trial, which took place in 2020, not the trial, but the fire itself. And I'm going to cover what the sentencing is and what happened to the Big Bear squad leader, Charlie Morton, when this fire took place. The article out of The Guardian says, couple pleads guilty over gender reveal party that sparked California wildfire. A California couple whose gender reveal party caused the fatal California El Dorado fire pled guilty to involuntary manslaughter on Friday. Refugio Jimenez Jr. and his partner Angela Renee Jimenez, who also pleaded guilty to several other counts in connection with the El Dorado fire, which they set off at a ranch in Yucapa, California, on the 5th of September, 2020, when a firework used in the photo shoot set the dry grass on fire. The couple attempted to put the flames out with a water bottle. They called 911, but strong winds spread the fire too quickly to control. One of the firefighters who arrived to battle that wildfire, Charlie Morton, 39, was killed. Now, for folks who don't know that story and the death of that Big Bear hotshot, we'll cover that now. This was the initial report that came out. This article is from firehouse.com. It says, California crew boss was trapped in a corner before death. It says, the U.S. Forest Service planned on the 18th day of the El Dorado fire that destroyed 5 homes in San Bernardino and Riverside counties was to cut a fire break that would protect Angeles Oaks and ignite backfires to steer the flames away from Big Bear. About 7 p.m. on September 17th, 2020, after wind gusts estimated at 60 miles an hour cast embers over bulldozer lines and Highway 38, Charlie Morton, a crew boss on a Forest Service Big Bear hotshot crew, left his crew and walked along the unburned side of the bulldozer line to inspect the spot fires. He radioed his captain that his squad, backed up by a couple of engine companies, could extinguish these new threats. But just then, the wind kicked up and the flames burned through the vegetation. Moments later, Morton radioed that he was trapped in a corner, and that was the last anybody had heard from him. Again, this is the fire started by this gender reveal party. Hours later, about 11:40 p.m., searchers found Morton's body with his scorched fire shelter next to him, barely unfolded. Almost all of Morton's clothing was burned off his body. I mean, this is horrific shit. This is horrible, horrible stuff. I mean, I can imagine it because I've been in tight spots before, but I've never physically pulled the shelter out of my pack. I've never gotten to that point. Like, I've gotten to the point where buckets are being dropped overhead and I'm calling in a seat drop so, you know, someone on my crew can get out of an area that they were stuck in. And I'm being radioed by people saying I'm in a tight spot, hoot and holler so I can find my way out of here. But I've never gotten to the point of pulling a shelter, which is probably one of the scariest things that could happen to a firefighter. It says he was still wearing his pack at the time when they found him. Now, again, this article was written a while ago, but it says two reports released this month by the Forest Service detail not only the on-the-ground actions and circumstances that preceded the death of Morton, but also the Forest Service's policies, culture, and lack of experienced firefighters that officials worried contributed to Morton's death and may put others at risk on future wildfires. These reports were generated through interviews of firefighters and others. The El Dorado Organizational Learning Report and El Dorado Learning Review narrative that was posted on Lessons Learned, but do not specifically blame any one person, tactic, or policy for Morton's death. And this is where it touches on that gender reveal party, saying that could become important as an attorney prepares the defense for Refugio and Angelina Jimenez, who were charged with involuntary manslaughter and arson crimes after authorities said the pyrotechnic device they used in the gender reveal photo shoot started the fire on September 5th. It says for Oceanside native Morton and other crew members, Big Bear was their turf, even though few crew members could actually afford to live there, and they believed the mountain town had to be protected. Well, of course, that's what you're going to think. It continues saying, quote, out of nowhere, winds, some said 60 miles an hour or more, appeared and blew spots across both Highway 38 and the Dozer Line. Firefighters who commonly worked in the San Bernardino National Forest would later comment that they were surprised by the intense fire behavior. Shortly after the second gust of wind, a strike team leader called for everybody to pull off the line and disengage. What started as a walk turned into a downhill run. CAL FIRE strike team members described the scene of panic as the fire intensity on the backside of the burn had increased dramatically and spot fires were growing in the green. It says when Morton's crew members looked behind them, they said Morton calmly was using a hose to put out some of the spot fires on his way down. And that sounds like a very hotshot thing to do. There's a hose lay, the hose is charged, and there's a nozzle right there. It's like, I'm going to spray out some of these spot fires as I walk down the mountain. But like, that doesn't seem like odd behavior to me. It sounds like one guy trying to save a piece of ground as everybody else is bailing. It was at that time Morton headed back towards the Dozer Line to get a better look at how many spot fires had crossed it. Again, that's what a squad leader does. I'm going to bump up to this high area. I'm going to look out over the fire so I can assess the situation, get some situational awareness, and figure out how I'm going to pick up all these pieces that just blew across our line. Again, that's standard operating procedure. I'm going to go check this out and see what we're working with. Morton radioed his recommendation plan of attack and followed up with an uncertain comment, "We'll see," to the captain. Again, that's typical stuff. Like, shit's hitting the fan. You come up with a plan. You have a secondary plan. And, you know, your supervisor asks you, hey, what's that? Is it going to work? And, yeah, the answer is, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see if it works. The next time the captain radioed Morton, there was no response. He then heard Charlie call saying, I'm in a corner. Horrible stuff. I got goosebumps just talking about it. The organizational leaning report said that spinning whirlwinds created by the extreme heat from the burning operation seemed to have formed at the very moment Charlie was walking along the dozer line at his exact location as he was walking. Now, I'll be the first one to admit that boots on the ground might have a different description of what happened. You know, I haven't talked directly with people who were there. There's often times where I've seen something happen on a fire line and then you read a report and you're like, well, that's not exactly what happened. So I just want to put that out there that I'm reading off of this report that was put out. And this isn't boots on the ground information, even though they interviewed people who had boots on the ground at the time. It continues saying that Morton no longer responded to his captain's calls. Radio traffic about a missing firefighter began to spread through the crews on the mountain. And that's how it happens. You know, sometimes one crew has another crew's crew frequency. Something we would call a squirrel channel. But you usually have your incident command channel, which is command traffic. And then you have your division channels or your divisional frequencies where it breaks the fire up and division-specific communication and traffic goes over that. And then you can narrow it even down to crew traffic. And if you're listening to another crew's traffic or you have a crew member from another crew hanging out with you, you can then hear that traffic and then things start to spread. And it's like, hey, so-and-so's got a problem, someone's missing, and that slowly travels down the line. It says the captain got into the truck with the superintendent to head back uphill, calling out for Morton on a loudspeaker. Morton's cell phone was pinged. Law enforcement helicopter crews attempted to use their heat sensors to locate Morton, but the heat from the flames made it impossible. One helicopter crew called out to Morton on its loudspeaker. I can't even imagine. It's just the stress and the sinking feeling that increases as time goes by when you're trying to find someone. A safety officer and a medic considered hiking in to search for Morton. Conditions were so dangerous, the medic later said that he used his phone to send a pin to another medic to mark his location just in case he didn't make it back. Ultimately, the pair called off their search after encountering an engine company crew. The engine company members' eyes were watering. They were coughing, sputtering with snot pouring out of their noses. The way up the dozer line had been incredibly uncomfortable. It's hard to see and dangerous. The hike did not seem survivable, they said. A quick reflection of light from an accordioned and undeployed fire shelter caught the battalion chief's eye on the edge of the dozer line near a bend. They stopped 20 feet away and were able to determine that Charlie had not survived. The Forest Service officials called Morton's fiance, Monica Tapia, of Irvine, California, and told her they needed to see her. Whew, horrific stuff. Before they could arrive, Morton's fiance had called a Forest Service superintendent. Charlie's fiance told him to tell her that Charlie was okay and he wasn't lost, that he was fine, the report said. But the superintendent couldn't bear to deliver the bad news, so he handed off the phone. A support services worker told her that Morton had died in the line of duty. And now we have discovered that all of this started from a gender reveal party in a field of dry grass on a windy day. I get a lot of criticism for talking about arsonists and human-caused starts. And I always say, be wary of the people who so fear about wildfires, but when you ask them what caused it, they say it doesn't matter, or we shouldn't be talking about that, or we should be more concerned about, you know, the effects, so on and so forth of it all, and not the point of ignition, when, in my mind, that's a big part of the whole story. I know a lot of you haven't heard that story before. I thought I would give the whole background of what happened before continuing on with what the sentencing and the consequences are of the individuals who did the gender reveal. In 2021, the couple was indicted for 30 crimes in connections with that El Dorado fire, including involuntary manslaughter. On Friday, the San Bernardino County District Attorney's Office announced that a plea deal had been made. Quote, resolving the case was never going to be a win, said San Bernardino County District Attorney Jason Anderson. The defendant's reckless conduct and tremendous impact on land, properties, emergency response resources, the displacement of an entire community, and resulting in the tragic death of Forest Service wildland firefighter and hotshot Charles Morton. Refugio Jimenez Jr. pleaded guilty to one charge of involuntary manslaughter for Morton's death and two counts of recklessly causing a fire in an inhabited structure, all felony counts. He will serve a year in jail, 2 years of probation, and complete 200 hours of community service. Angela Jimenez pleaded guilty to three misdemeanor counts of recklessly causing fire to property and must complete a year of summary probation along with 400 hours of community service. They have also been ordered to pay $1.78 million in restitution to victims. I would hope this brings some sort of closure to everyone involved. I wouldn't think that it's a complete, you know, shutting of that door on the past, because how can it be? How can that be the case? You know, to find your own crew member on the line, or to be on that crew when it happened, or to be the fiance who got the call, that's going to stick with you. That remains with you. And like, I know firefighters, I know hotshots who have witnessed death on the line, and they still aren't the same. They just still aren't the same. You know, there's one guy I know who found some pilots who crashed on a drop when they were flying a tanker on the border of Nevada and Utah, and he would have waking dreams of seeing those pilots' faces because he hiked in there to see what the result was while the crew dug line around it, because we had to basically treat it as a spot fire and contain that fire that was caused by the crash. He ended up leaving the fire service a couple years later. So clearly it's just horrific results of what took place. And I'm sure there's plenty of scars that just are going to take an incredibly long time to heal, if they ever. That's what a scar is. You can still see it even though it's been healed over. There was another gender reveal party that was basically wildfire related a little while back. It made a big splash this last summer, where they had a seat pilot, which is a tanker that you can either spread water or retardant with. And the gender reveal was going to be with the seat drop. And they did that, but then the seat crashed after it dropped its load, killing the pilot. It's just, I laugh because it's ridiculous what the gender reveal has turned into. It's, you know, they're getting more and more dangerous. In celebration of life, we're making it more dangerous to reveal what it is. I don't know. Maybe I'm out of touch. Who knows? Who knows? Anyway, I wanted to bring you an update on that. Before we go, I wanted to cover the announcement made a couple days ago coming out of the Department of Interior and the Bureau of Land Management. Basically, they got a bunch of money to retrofit a bunch of vehicles and turn them into desert firefighting vehicles, which was nice to see that some money's going into this new equipment. The Forest Service has mandated electric vehicles. The Department of the Interior is like, we need off-road fire vehicles to fight fire. So there's kind of a divergence of what that is. I was going to actually do a whole segment coming up here on that mandate, since it's kind of evolved for a little bit since we last talked about it. I think the mandate was 2 years ago. If you haven't heard of this, the Forest Service said all small trucks need to be electric by 2027, I think it was, and I could be off by a year here. And then all vehicles had to be electric by 2030-something, 2032 or something like that. And they were all going to be these Ford Lightnings. But then Ford came out and said, no one's buying our Ford Lightning trucks and they cost too much to make and we're having battery issues. And now we're actually going to lay off a bunch of people because it costs too much to make them and they're going to cost $6,000 more than a traditional gasoline car. But the Forest Service signed a contract with Ford to have all these trucks sent out in the next couple years. Again, you wonder why the budget is shot and the Forest Service is saying we're going to have to cut salaries. It's like, well, you overspent on electric trucks that are dangerous to even drive around in a wildfire. And you paid way more money for them than you would for just a traditional truck. Anyway, I'm not going to dive into all of that. I'm going to talk about what the Bureau of Land Management is doing. The Department of Interior today launched a pilot program to strengthen local government's wildfire response by converting vehicles to wildland fire engines. This program, which is funded by a $5 million investment from the bipartisan infrastructure law, will help small remote emergency response agencies quickly expand their wildfire response capability as they continue to face the devastating impacts of climate change, drought, and intensifying wildfires. Again, I just need to put it out there that last year was the slowest wildfire season in almost three decades. No one ever says that, but I'm just putting that in there. It continues saying we are providing new resources to equip local governments and the firefighting workforce with the resources they need to keep our communities and landscapes safe, said Secretary Deb Haaland, or Haaland. This pilot program will help more local and state agencies quickly respond when a wildfire starts nearby, increasing their capacity to protect local communities' property and infrastructure. The pilot program can be used by local governments to purchase slip-on tanker units that will allow them to quickly convert trucks and other vehicles to be operated as wildland fire engines. If you don't know what a slip tank is, basically, if you can imagine what a pickup looks like, and you have an empty bed in the back, these slip-ons are basically that. It's a ready-to-go unit that you can just slip into the bed of a truck, bolt it down, and now you have 300 gallons, 350 gallons, 600 gallons, depending on what your chassis and frame looks like and what it can hold. It says local governments that provide emergency services to areas with a population of 25,000 or less are eligible to apply. So a lot of these small desert towns, basically. What it comes down to is rural Utah, rural Idaho, and rural Nevada just got a bunch of new Type 6 engines. It says grant amounts will range between $10,000 and $200,000. And the infrastructure law authorized up to $50 million for the pilot program, and $5 million is available during this first round. The slip-on tanker pilot program will strengthen coordination between the Interior Department, states, and local communities as we work together to address the growing threat of wildfires. Improved collaboration is a central tenet of the Wildland Fire Mitigation and Management Commission's final report, which was released September 2023, and we went over that. The commission, created by the bipartisan infrastructure law, was charged with making recommendations to Congress to improve federal policies related to the mitigation, suppression, and management of wildfires in the United States, rehabilitation of land that was devastated by wildfires, and it was comprised of representatives from federal agencies, state, local, and tribal governments, and the private sector. The commission crafted a comprehensive, consensus-based set of recommendations to address the nation's wildfire crisis. Yep, well over 100 pages long. I think it was 80-plus recommendations, probably more than that. Again, I'm just going off of memory. It might have been something like 140 recommendations. I'll have to go back and look at it, but it was a lot. And really, the only real criticism of that panel is that there really weren't any wildland firefighters on the panel. There weren't. There were academics, there were people from private sector companies, contractors, you know, professors from Berkeley, people from DC think tanks, and not really a lot of people who had ever fought fire. Like, I think it was 1% or less than 1% of the commission had actually fought wildland fire or was currently qualified to fight wildland fire. It continues saying that the infrastructure law is bringing much-needed support to communities across the country to increase the resilience of lands facing wildfire threats. The funding available today through this pilot program is part of a more than $785 million bipartisan infrastructure law funding, which was allocated by the Interior since the law's enactment to address wildfire risk on the public and tribal lands and better support federal wildland firefighters. If you want one of these grants and you want to get a new slip-on tank in your BLM truck out in the desert, you have until March 21st of 2024 to file that. This article was put out on February 6th by the Department of the Interior. And the application process will be available in the Federal Register in just the next couple days. So it sounds like that money, nearly $1 billion, is beginning to get spent. $5 million at least has been allocated out of $50 million for this specific program. And it does sound like there's some organizations that are jumping on this and are going to get some new Type 6 engines. As we push into the rest of February, getting into March, things are really going to start to ramp up. I guess we could talk about real quick before we go what's going on with the pay and the funding that is going to run out here in the beginning of March. So, as I wrote on the Substack, the Forest Service came out and said, hey, we're out of money. We actually have less money than we thought we did, and it's all gone, and we got problems. And we don't know what the funding's going to look like going forward coming out of Congress, so we're just going to start pulling back and ramping down all of our spending, basically a hiring freeze for a lot of these higher-up positions. And it's all based on what Congress is going to pass. So right now, if there isn't going to be any sort of pay cut coming up for both the Department of the Interior, Bureau of Land Management firefighters, and the Forest Service firefighters, it's this Wildland Firefighter Paycheck Protection Act that has been introduced, and it has some steam behind it, but from what I'm hearing, it's stuck in committee. And I believe it's the Natural Resources Committee that it's stuck in. There is debate about whether they're going to put it on the floor of the House and the Senate to vote on. Actually, I take that back. The Senate voted on it, and it sounds like it's good to go. But it's held up in a House committee. So if you want to encourage your representatives to keep wildland firefighter pay where it's at currently and not drop it by 40%, it looks like that is the last hope right now, at least with this Congress and with this administration, because it is an election year, which makes things even harder because nothing really ever gets done during an election year. It's when politicians turn into something called a lame duck, and that just means that nothing ever gets done. But it's not hopeless, because this thing could still pass, but it's not going to pass without people bugging the representatives and saying, hey, you need to pass the Wildland Firefighter Paycheck Protection Act and at least put it up for a vote. But we'll see what happens. Congress is off for the rest of the week. They basically said, hey, we're not going to do any more voting the rest of this week. They'll be gone through the weekend. And as a lot of you out there probably have picked up on, is Congress is basically broken and nothing's getting done. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's war funding, border funding, wildfire funding. It's just nothing is getting done. But again, if the Wildland Firefighter Paycheck Protection Act passes, which is the point of me bringing this up, everything stays where it's at. Current funding, basically making the retention pay permanent and sidestepping any sort of reduction in the pay that you get, hence the name Paycheck Protection Act. So I would just encourage people to go out there, call, email. Calling works better than emailing, but that's what is available on the table for keeping this pay where it is. longtime listeners, longtime readers, I'm sure you know I've been skeptical of this for a very long time. I've been hopeful, but I've been skeptical because I've seen it go on for 12 plus years of all these promises. But the thing I need to stress is it's nothing has ever come this close. Everything's usually killed before it gets to Congress, or you just don't get any support at all. But there are a lot of folks backing this act. It's just, again, stuck in committee, and it's been turned into a bargaining chip, is what it's been turned into, which is what everything gets turned into in D.C., it seems like. But we've never seen anything come this far. There's about a month left, a little less than a month left, for this thing to get through committee and get a vote before the budget runs out. Or we get another continuing resolution and they kick the can down the road again, and the same conversation just continues on for another couple months. I don't know. What I do know is if anybody I know, if their work performance was matched to Congress lately, they would all be fired. Like, they wouldn't have a job. Be like, you haven't done anything in months. Arguably, you haven't done anything in years. At least anything beneficial for the company. So you got to go, Bill. It's time for you to leave. So again, it's not hopeless. There is a fairly well-known bill called the Wildland Firefighter Paycheck Protection Act that probably could pass if it was allowed to get a vote. But the committee is not allowing it to get a vote, and that's where the focus needs to be if people want to push this thing forward. And if you want to be proactive, call and email your representatives and say, hey, get this thing out of committee and get it to a vote. We got less than a month. Anyway, that's the closing of this show. Plenty to talk about coming up. I'm sure folks are starting to feel like it's coming. The wildfire season's coming. It's getting closer. People are probably starting to look at their running shoes and saying, I should probably go get some cardio in. Maybe I should do some push-ups and pull-ups. Maybe I should throw some weight on my back and start hiking. And one more thing I'll say before I go. There's a lot of people sending me messages being like, everyone should quit. There should be a strike, this and that. And I read those and I think to myself, I don't know if that's the best bet. And this is why. This is why. If you have been following up on what's going on with the economy and you know, the figures come out saying that it's the best employment market ever, but I follow like tech news and business news and things like that. Tech companies and large corporations are firing tens of thousands of people basically weekly now. The amount of layoffs that have come out of the tech world, and UPS just fired a bunch of people, Amazon's firing a bunch of people. There's a lot of people out there right now that are looking for work, because layoffs have really seen an uptick. If the Wildland Firefighter Paycheck Protection Act passes, my opinion is a job in the woods fighting fire sounds kind of nice, actually. It actually sounds kind of nice. And it's going to be busy. So that's my two cents. I understand the frustration. I totally get it. And I've spent, you know, countless hours expressing that. But lately I've been zooming out and looking at, you know, what are my neighbors looking like? And what's the job market looking like? What are the corporations doing? Oh, they're laying a bunch of people off. They're firing a bunch of people. And quite frankly, if I could secure a supervisor job fighting fire in our nation's forests, right about now that sounds like kind of a good gig. It really does. So anyway, I am going to push that Wildland Firefighter Paycheck Protection Act till the end. We'll see what happens in the first week of March. And fire season's coming. It's right around the corner. People are going to be busy before they know it. And quite frankly, that's kind of exciting. So on that note, reach out to a homie you haven't talked to in a while. Check in on them. See how they're doing. Exercise. It's time to get that cardio back up. Eat good. Get that fresh air. Stretch. Hydrate. Get the rest you need because you need that to recover. But when you get up, you got to get it done.
I have traveled this year over all the United States. through the Alleghenies, the White Mountains, and the Catskills, the Rockies and the Bitterroot Mountains, the Cascades, the Coast Range, and the Sierras.